back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line. That's Ascension Technologies text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program about a half hour from now. He's running for the Court of Criminal Appeals, Thomas Kavan. Also, we got U.S. Senator Katie Britt coming up at the bottom at 10 o'clock hour, going to give us her State of the Union preview. And then my friend from way back, our Tuesday regular for the Media Research Center, Matt Philbin. So make sure you stick around for that. But joining us now, a very important guest, so timely to get him on here, very appreciative for his time, Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall, leading off this morning. General Marshall, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Good to be with you.
Hey, thank you for making time. I really do appreciate it. Tell me I'm not crazy, but the Alabama Department of Corrections, watching it from here, I mean, it is an unmitigated disaster. I don't know what they do there all day, but this latest episode, General, with the notifications and that 2021 law that a lot of people think was a bad law, and myself included, they can't even get that right. Why are we putting so much on corrections these days?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I go back with you back to 2021 when we were very much specifically opposed to this bill. And for the reasons that I think are now playing out is that by making it retroactive, our policymakers have inherently made this a disproportionate violent number of offenders that are being released. I was looking at the list in Mobile, for example, about the number of folks that are coming back, and they are predominantly those who committed murders, rapes, robberies, and assaults. And God forbid you're in Jefferson County, where 36 are released and 33 of those are for violent offenses. And we're doing that to what is already communities that are dealing with difficult crime problems right now. And the reality is that Alabama has never tried to supervise violent offenders. And we're trying to do this in a way that's using a risk assessment tool that, at least right now, the early results were that somebody released for murder had the ankle monitor on their ankle for 2 days before it was released, because somehow another risk assessment tool said that they were safe to be allowed to do without it. And so, I think it's time for us to have a substantive and transparent debate, not only about the implementation already. And Jeff, know this, there's several months where we're going to have 200 or plus released that are going to be, again, disproportionately violent coming through the end of the summer. And we're taxing that on a system that's never had to supervise violent offenders before.
Well, it's not like there's a lot of room for error here, right? The margin for error is so small, but it's not like you can learn on the job. How are we going to monitor these inmates or whatever it may be? You watch the track record of the Department of Corrections, the struggles they have with everything, building new prisons, death row, corrections officers, accusations of Eighth Amendment violations, et cetera. And then you put this on top of that, and it makes me wonder, these lawmakers, what were they thinking when they said, well, here's another duty for these guys. Is there any reason to believe that we're going to be this is a good move for public safety? Whatever you think about criminal justice reform, we can have that philosophical debate, but the practicality of it, to me, doesn't seem feasible with the agency as it is.
Well, and we had to weigh in with litigation, which, you know, it's not the norm that the Attorney General is suing other state agencies, but, you know, we found out on the Friday before that this release was to take place on Tuesday that I think it was 18 victims had been notified that were required to be notified over a number that was in excess of 300. And we presented what we thought was the strategy to get 10 days to a TRO to be able to allow for there to be appropriate victim notification. And Jeff, it's not fair to the victim of a rape or the family members of those who have lost their lives to get a letter in the mail and realize that somebody's out. I mean, I just don't think that's right by victims, and we ought to do better than that in the state. But, you know, even when we tried to create this 10-day window for there to be a pause to allow that to get done, we had the governor's office oppose. And although we're grateful that at least there's an acknowledgement that there was going to be victim notification, it clearly is not occurring in a way that respects the rights of victims and understanding, particularly involving violent offenders, that we need to respect the fact that victims need to be prepared. And I can also tell you that we're already seeing people be arrested as part of this most recent release. I got information out of St. Clair County and Calhoun County of those who just got out, you know, on Friday, that they've already been rearrested. And the other thing that we cannot, I think, look away from is at least the federal experience that have done reentry and supervision far longer than us if somebody has gotten out, demonstrates that violent offenders recidivate at a higher rate. They do it more frequently and they do it with more serious offenses. And I think that's scary when those people are released on our streets.
You mentioned something kind of interesting there about having to sue within the government. I mean, can you ever remember a time in your experience where the executive branch sued within the executive branch? I mean, like, how do you approach that?
Yeah, it was definitely a different experience. Let me just say that, not the norm. But yet what we had was a statute that said there had to be victim notification. There was, clearly, that had not been satisfied at the point that they had defined the list. And we had to make sure that victims' rights were preserved. There's no authority directly given to the commissioner to not release them. And we felt like that was the only vehicle to be able to do what we thought needed to be done, is to respect the rights of victims, to ensure that notification took place, and to delay the release of these individuals until the statutory requirements have been met. And again, believe that was the way that this should have been approached. Governor's office disagreed. That's their prerogative, but I don't think it was the right way to deal with it.
Now let's go back to 2021, that special session. I remember talking to you. I remember your op-ed. This law, and a lot of people were warning about this. This is not good. You just look at the law itself, and you didn't. A lot of these lawmakers tell me, General, that They're telling me behind the scenes, or we had Chip Brown tell us this, 1819news.com, but they were maybe undersold or what didn't turn out what it was supposed to be. You're familiar with the law, and you're also familiar. I would say this. It's hard to get a grasp of what's really going on at ADOC. Is it reasonable, based on your knowledge of this law, to not really know what impact it was going to have on releases and know how this was going to end up ultimately?
Well, we knew the impact. I mean, one of the things we said very publicly was that this was going to disproportionately, because, again, the impact of the 2021 law was simply to make the 2015 provisions retroactive. And when you have a prison population that is 83% violent, by making this law retroactive, then you were going to disproportionately capture inmates within that net to be released that were violent as opposed to nonviolent. And Alabama's never had that experience of being able to supervise nonviolent offenders. And we were going to do it, you know, with two vehicles that were being argued. One is electronic monitoring. And this is not house arrest. And frankly, as a prosecutor, I'd tell you that what electronic monitoring tells me is simply that I've got more evidence of when somebody goes to commit a crime, what location they were at, right? I mean, it doesn't prevent somebody from committing the offense. And we're using a risk assessment tool that has not been completely validated that I'm aware of. Maybe it has, and somebody can enlighten me on that. But yet, even when we see those who develop these risk assessment tools tell us that the criminal justice professionals kind of trust it more than statisticians do, because you can't really truly evaluate appropriately individualized behavior, particularly of those who've had a history of repeat offenses in our criminal justice system.
All that being said, just for the record here, General, you've been consistent on this. You didn't wake up last week or whatever and decide that you could get some political points scored here and whatever. You're ambitious. This is something, and this is the one of the criticisms I sometimes hear. But I referenced that 2021 column. I mean, this has been your consistent position on this 2021 law, that it is not, as in a good law, this isn't some kind of shameless opportunistic stunt you're pulling here.
No, I mean, we've been clear since 2015. And frankly, we were somewhat the lone voice other than the sheriffs and the chiefs out there pushing against this, saying that this was not an effective tool that we believed to enhance community sentiment, or at a minimum, let's dive in and have a significant debate. Because remember, this occurred as a result of being placed in the call of a special session. We know that special sessions are truncated, and this was clearly a desire for many to be able to get this bill passed. And let's have legitimate, substantive debate about whether that works. You know, I told you about the federal experience, and those violent offenses or those offenders recidivated rates far higher. Let's dive into that and understand it. Can we look and find ways that we can do reentry differently? Can we put it at the back end of a sentence, by the way, instead of releasing somebody early? And let's also have a transparent discussion about the impact of good time credit, reducing sentences, and allowing this to be able to reduce it even more. Because, for example, a 15-year sentence in Alabama where somebody maximizes good time and then gets out up to a year early on supervised, mandatory supervised release means that a 15-year sentence becomes basically about a 3.5-year sentence. And I'm not sure legislators understood that.
Well, that's one of the criticisms I hear sometimes. Maybe a lot of these lawmakers don't really understand the tenets of the criminal justice system that and all, how it really works. But one thing I do hear, and this Jim Hill and others who are were proponents and continue to be proponents of this will tell me, well, they were going to end these guys getting released were going to end a sentence anyway, and rather than just have them released out there into the open with no way to keep an eye on them, this at least gives us that element, and therefore this is enhancing public safety. What do you say to the people that are making that case?
Well, if you look right now at our latest stats, we've reduced the number of supervising officials 21% from last year to this year. So we got basically 75 fewer individuals, according to Barnum Parole's annual report, able to engage in the supervision of a system that right now has 22,000 individuals that are subject to supervision. My question to those that argue in favor of this is, how are we legitimately doing supervision in the right way at those numbers, and how are we really making a difference? If the desire was simply to let folks out of prison early, then we need to say that. We need to say that transparently. If we believe that this is going to enhance public safety, then we have to, I believe, be able to talk transparently about what that supervision looks like, because there's no requirement that somebody stays, for example, on electronic monitor the entire time they've been released early until they're in the sentence. What we know is it's up to the discretion of Board of Pardon and Parole as to how long that takes place. And we've already seen that somebody who had committed a crime of murder, who had made threats while they were in prison, had the electronic monitor on for less than 2 or 3 days, because that was what the risk assessment said and what the policy said. Now, I understand them saying now that maybe the policy's changed, but shouldn't we have that discussion before we get to the point that we're allowing a murderer to only be supervised under electronic monitoring for 2 days? I think we should.
Or should it be codified into law, not just up to the whim of a bureaucrat in these agencies, right? I mean, should the law have been more precise? It maybe even gone as far as say no rapist or murderers allowed out under this provision or something like that. I mean, would that have made this any more palatable?
I think it would have. Of course, you know, we tried to put at least a little more of those parameters around it, and we're obviously unsuccessful. The other thing, Jeff, that doesn't get talked about either is, let's also recognize that just because we label the offense of an individual with a certain crime and why they're in there, that doesn't always tell us the complete story of what somebody did. And I've used the example of somebody that may be in there for child abuse. It doesn't mean that they weren't charged with the rape or sodomy of a child, and yet they just simply pled guilty to child abuse because they being the prosecutor and law enforcement, wanted to avoid a child having to testify publicly at trial. And so even the offense itself for which they're convicted doesn't always tell us a true story about the crime that somebody actually committed. And I think that's scary.
Well, let's talk about remedies here. When I asked these lawmakers we had the Blount County DA last week. Senator Elliott has been an outspoken opponent of this. Is this something that deserves attention sooner rather than later? I mean, could the governor intervene here and executive order this and pump the brakes, or does the legislature need to change the law here? And how soon does that need to happen, if so?
I think it can happen immediately by the governor calling a special session, because, again, there's roughly another 1,200 inmates that are going to come out under the same cycle as a result of the 2021 law over the next several months. I think acting quickly would be prudent for everybody to call a special session. And let's have that joint committee of both the House and the Senate come together and have a discussion about what does notification look like for victims? What does supervision and release look like? Are there ways of doing reentry inside the wire, basically in prison itself, beginning a program that makes sense? And then can we potentially look at, rather than early release of individuals to supervision, that we put that on the end of sentence to make sure that the original sentence itself is something that is effectuated, that the judge's intentions when they put somebody in prison comes to reality, and that we evaluate what recidivism really looks like and what that means in community.
I just want to hit on this one more time because you something you just said. You're telling us here that there's up to 1,200 more inmates could be released over the next few months.
What we're being told right now is that roughly there's an additional 200 inmates a month through July that are likewise covered by the 2021 amendments. So that roughly between 1,000 to 1,200. Now, we'll see what that number ultimately shows us. At least that's what we're being told tentatively right now, are still to come out between now and July.
And that includes there will be violent criminals that will, convicted of violent crimes, that is, that will be eligible under this, right?
Yeah, the only crime that's not eligible is the sexual abuse of a child under the age of 12. Beyond that, everything else is subject to the act.
General, keep us up to date on this and what you're hearing, because I mean, some of the stuff you told us, you're just not hearing from anybody. We really, really do appreciate that. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. Take care.
All right. That was Attorney General Steve Marshall there on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. 20 years, probably.